Having worked his way up from the enlisted ranks to full colonel, he served our country for more than 32 years. He has served as a bomber squadron commander, bomb disposal technician, Joint Chiefs of Staff Operations Officer, assisted the National Security Team with the campaign plan for the global war on terrorism. He authored the first theater nuclear war plan and served as the vice commander of America's largest airborne intelligence wing. Colonel Rob Manus is a true American hero. This is Rob Manus Live.
This is a historic moment, the arrival of the North Vietnamese regular army in Saigon.
Welcome back to the Rob Manus Show, folks. It's More War Monday again, and we're live on Worldview Tube and our X Spaces simulcast. Well, 50 years ago last week, the world watched in horror as the last American helicopter lifted from the rooftop of our embassy in Saigon. South Vietnam had fallen. But as my guest today will explain, this wasn't a military defeat. It was a betrayal by politicians in Washington who abandoned our ally after promising to stand with them. Dr. Rod Martin joins me today. In his recent essay republished on X, he reminds us of the full story. After the Paris Peace Accords under Nixon and Kissinger, America had achieved so-called, quote, peace with honor, unquote. South Vietnam was capable of defending itself with our promised support. That's a key phrase. But post-Watergate, a radical Congress cut military aid by over 75%. Blocked any response to North Vietnamese violations of the ceasefire and left our friends without bullets, fuel, or hope. What followed was catastrophic. Re-education camps, executions, the boat people crisis where millions fled and hundreds of thousands died at sea, and Pol Pot's genocide in Cambodia. Dr. Martin compares it directly to Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan as another Saigon moment. He also shares vital lessons from Richard Nixon's No More Vietnams about fighting to win, keeping commitments, and the dangers of weakness. Dr. Martin, welcome to the Rob Manus Show. It's great to have you with us today, sir, to help break down your essay, but most importantly, talk to America about why this history is important and what it means for us today.
Well, it's certainly an honor to be here, and it's always good to see you. And yes, the fall of Saigon, of course, was 50 years ago, 51 years ago, last week. It was just a cataclysm, just sad beyond words. I mean, if you can think about it as it is and not be moved to tears, something's wrong with you. You know, maybe you were educated in a public school or something like I was. You know, something's horribly off. The truth is, South Vietnam was a rolling tragedy. There's no question about that. Really beginning with JFK allowing Diem to be murdered in 63. And this was just cataclysmic in a number of ways. Diem was popular. Diem was elected. He was capable. Interestingly enough, he was Catholic, which is not something you associate with Vietnam a lot. But it was very, very similar to the Protestant president of the Republic of China, Chiang Kai-shek, whom an earlier Democrat administration sold down the river. Mm-hmm. There was no need for China to fall. And yet we allowed that in part in consequence to George Marshall's white paper in 1948. And then history repeats. And we find ourselves in Vietnam. We pull the rug out from under, literally and physically, Diem's government, mm-hmm. which resulted in just a series of coups. And then Lyndon Johnson, in my view, foolishly sends 500,000 troops to Indochina. Well, Curtis LeMay had this. And as a former wing commander, you should appreciate more than most. Curtis LeMay understood what overwhelming air power could do. And hippies will frequently tell us that America dropped more bombs on North Vietnam than, you know, all the munitions exploded in World War II, as if that's a bad thing. No, that was actually an incredibly beneficial thing. North Vietnam was doing everything in its power to subjugate its entire region. And it was a Soviet client. It was the Soviets who rearmed them after the peace in 1973 against the terms of the treaty. And so we're talking about potential Soviet domination of everything south of China, which it would just be horrifying. Think about the time we were living in. In that era, it's not just China that's getting 80% of its oil from the Middle East, or, I'm sorry, 40%, I guess, right now. It's America. And we saw that in the 70s. We saw that with the energy crisis in 73 and 79. The Strait of Malacca matters. It's always mattered. Sunda and Lombok matter. They've always mattered. And you're talking about communist domination potentially all the way through Singapore. That's just not acceptable for the future of the West. And indeed, had that ever been achieved, there's a decent chance we would not have survived the Cold War. So it's not that Vietnam didn't matter. It's that Johnson's strategy was foolish. And LeMay got it right, and Nixon proved that in December of 72 with the result that we got to that peace with honor. We got to his goal of Vietnamization so that the South Vietnamese were able and ready to defend themselves. And then we broke all our promises because the Democrats in Congress cut off even so much as bullets and gasoline for South Vietnam's Jeeps. So we spend 8 years in theater. We lose 58,000 American souls. We tear the country asunder, and then we hand a free country, perhaps not as free as Texas, but a lot freer than China under the Cultural Revolution. We hand it to the communists, and with it, Laos and Cambodia. And just as easily as not, could have been Thailand and Malaysia and Singapore and Burma. So a catastrophic self-inflicted wound, and the human cost is even worse.
Yeah, it's really a Holocaust, isn't it?
It was.
Rod. I'm glad you mentioned General LeMay. I got to meet him when I was a lieutenant. I won the bombing competition as the best navigator in my SAC squadron.
Awesome.
That year. He was in a wheelchair by then and wasn't talking a lot, but he did say congratulations. But I've studied him all of my life and studied this concept of air power and naval power and campaigns. And I want to get into the Iran thing here towards the end of the show and the Afghanistan thing. But I didn't realize that Kennedy had green-lighted Diem's fall and his assassination. I didn't realize that. That's new information for me.
It's
on
a somewhat controversial point, to be fair, but because he didn't like order a hit. That's not what happened. He just communicated very clearly, and not shockingly at the State Department's insistence, that we would not mind if a coup transpired. Well, okay, they immediately shot Diem and his brother.
Yeah.
10 minutes later, they're gone. And there's no way JFK isn't responsible for this. You know, I went to law school. I haven't practiced in a long time. You know, after I went, you know, and helped do PayPal, I have decided to have a different and better career. But, you know, in law, we talk about these things. And the truth is, he knew or should have known the consequences of what he communicated. It is a much bigger and more malevolent mistake than the State Department communicating that South Korea was outside of the area of America's interests in 1950. And it had very direct, very immediate consequences to good men, not perfect men. Let's make no mistake. The charges of corruption in South Vietnam were legitimate, maybe overblown, but legitimate. You know, this was not exactly, again, Florida, but we have to have perspective, much as we have to about the Shah in Iran. This is a country that, by the standards of Western democracy, is relatively primitive. They don't have longstanding democratic institutions going back to Magna Carta or the Glorious Revolution or the English Bill of Rights. They're learning as they're going. They are overcoming ancient tyrannical tradition. And it takes time. Also, Diem may have been a Christian, but his people weren't. So you have a very different worldview in play, and Diem, like the Shah a decade later, doing his best to bring his country into the modern world, and we aborted that there, we aborted it in China, we aborted it in Iran, and each time there's exactly one group of people responsible. It's the same leaders of the Democratic Party again and again and again.
It's very interesting because and we'll see a clip from President Nixon about the peace with honor thing, but it's been Republican presidents that have ended up having to come in and pay the price after the debacles created by a series of Democrat presidents, you know, Kennedy and LBJ, then Nixon, then Carter and Ford and Nixon have to deal with it. And then Carter comes in and then Reagan has to come in and deal with the Iranians and on and on and on. I don't think people really have a full understanding of that issue, but that's what's been happening, isn't it?
The Democrats love our enemies, and they just give them everything every time. You know, again, China, total debacle, which resulted in the Korean War and the Vietnam War and the problems that we're still having today. And that was a huge mistake by the Truman administration. JFK, huge mistake with regard to South Vietnam. LBJ, huge mistake with regard to how he went about the war. And that became manifest relatively quickly. By 68, you've got Walter Cronkite, who honestly was just being a propagandist for the other side, claiming that the war is irretrievably lost as we roll up the Viet Cong in the Tet Offensive. But at the same time, the country is already ripped asunder. So yes, Nixon has to come in and fix it. And Reagan has to fix the debacle of the 70s. And you know, it changes a little bit when you get to George W. Bush. And I did support what he was trying to do in Iraq. And I don't want to be too harsh on him. But the neoconservative model is a little too proactive to work, because the American political system will not support that kind of long-term engagement. It just won't do it. And we learned that in Vietnam. And then we doubled down on it in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I want to say, to Bush's great credit, you know, people don't realize this. They think we lost in Iraq. The truth is, Iraq is a functioning democracy. It's not super free, but on the other hand, you could say that about Canada and Great Britain just at the moment. Britain actually imprisons 10 times as many people for speech violations as Vladimir Putin. So, you know, we're having a democratic crisis throughout the world. But Iraq actually worked. It just took a while. Afghanistan probably could have worked, But it was a longer term commitment than a country that has elections every 2 years can sustain. And that's the failing in neoconservatism, which I would distinguish very, very plainly, not just from Nixon and Kissinger's realism, but from Reagan's what I would term moral realism, which has the same aims in some respects as the liberal internationalists, wants a democratic world, wants a better future, but understands the limits of American power. So, Trump has been a tremendous corrective on all of that. And of course, Afghanistan didn't have to fail. That was a choice by the Biden team.
None of these have had to fail, to be honest with you. Not at all. And I think Iraq probably could have come out better had we done it better. But war is war. That's why it's such a very important decision when you decide to go into it. We got to take a break, Dr. Martin. When we come back from this commercial, we'll talk. I want to talk about President Nixon and Kissinger and the betrayal of the American military in Vietnam as we move forward with this discussion. We'll be right back with Dr. Rod Martin.
Good evening. I have asked for this radio and television time tonight for the purpose of announcing that we today have concluded an agreement to end the war and bring peace with honor in Vietnam and in Southeast Asia. The following statement is being issued at this moment in Washington and Hanoi. At 12:30 Paris time today, January 23, 1973, the agreement on ending the war and restoring peace in Vietnam was initialed by Dr. Henry Kissinger on behalf of the United States and Special Advisor Lee Duc Tho on behalf of the Democratic Republic of Vietnam. The agreement will be formally signed by the parties participating in the Paris Conference on Vietnam on January 27, 1973 at the International Conference Center in Paris. The ceasefire will take effect at 2400 Greenwich Mean Time, January 27, 1973. The United States and the Democratic Republic of Vietnam express the hope that this agreement will ensure stable peace in Vietnam and contribute to the preservation of lasting peace in Indochina and Southeast Asia. That concludes the formal statement. Throughout the years of negotiations, we have insisted on peace with honor. In my addresses to the nation from this room of January 25th and May 8th, I set forth the goals that we considered essential for peace with honor. In the settlement that has now been agreed to, all the conditions that I laid down then have been met. A ceasefire, internationally supervised, will begin at 7 p.m. this Saturday, January 27, Washington time. Within 60 days from this Saturday, all Americans held prisoners of war throughout Indochina will be released. There will be the fullest possible accounting for all of those who are missing in action. During the same 60-day period, all American forces will be withdrawn from South Vietnam.
Back to the Rod Mayna Show. It's More War Monday, and my guest today is Dr. Rod Martin, who's got a great essay out that he republished just days ago on the anniversary of the fall of Saigon in Vietnam. He's also the founder and CEO of Martin Capital and the Rod Martin Report. So go check it out. Great. Just a font of knowledge and information that isn't covered in the mainstream media every day, folks. And Dr. Martin, I wanted to talk about the words betrayal. You mentioned DM being taken out in 1963 because of decisions of an American president. And you mentioned the Tet Offensive and how, and I've talked to men that have fought in the Tet Offensive as regular soldiers and Marines and airmen, and they all say, we can't understand how that could ever be seen except anything as a near catastrophic victory for us and catastrophe for the North Vietnamese. And you talk about bombing and General LeMay and how effective it was. And the reason why President Nixon really was able to give that statement right there is because of the air campaign, wasn't it? And the Navy campaign.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. And reaching back to Tet, you know, people mm-hmm. remember this as a huge defeat, and it was a huge defeat for the Viet Cong.
Yeah.
The Viet Cong exposed themselves. This is the time to rise. This is when we're going to take power. And the United States military annihilated them, just annihilated them. The VC could not recompose itself for years after Tet. And the truth is, there's a reason that in your first clip, you show the North Vietnamese regular army marching mm-hmm. into Saigon, because the VC was a cipher and it just utterly irrelevant. The problem is that was always true. And JFK did understand it. He just bungled it. LBJ understood it. He just bungled it way worse. Nixon mm-hmm. understood it and fixed it. North Vietnam was always a Soviet satellite and proxy. It was always seeking to extend the Soviet empire into places that we could not recover from. And we keep hearing about the, you know, America had no vital interests in South Vietnam. Malarkey, you're sitting on the South China Sea. How much of the world's commerce passes through the South China Sea? Past Subic and Clark in the Philippines, past Taiwan, to Japan and South Korea, and to California for that matter, because in those days we're importing an awful lot of oil from the Middle East and some of it's coming from that direction. So mm-hmm. all of these things were vital, and the aim wasn't just South Vietnam. The aim was all of Indochina and Southeast Asia. They weren't going to stop if they could continue until they hit Singapore. So mm-hmm. Nixon understands this. He understands what the stakes are. He also understands that this is absolutely untenable if the South Vietnamese can't carry their own burden, which is an echo of Donald Trump today talking to NATO, saying, you know, it's not acceptable for Germany to show up at NATO exercises with broomsticks because they don't own enough rifles for their military to train with real guns. I mean, that's absurd. It's absurd that Great Britain has twice as many admirals as warships today. If a Girl Scout troop walked into the Falkland Islands, there's nothing Great Britain could do about it today. It's absurd. That's not a partnership. That's not an alliance. That's a surly teenager in your basement making sarcastic comments about everything you do. That's not okay. Well, Nixon, around the time I was born, understood perfectly. You actually have to have an ally who can stand up, and we're going to have to stand them up. That's what we did over the 4 years of the first Nixon administration. And the net result, plus the bombing campaign in December of 72, was the Treaty of Paris, finally signed on, if I recall, January 27th of 73. This was a huge breakthrough. And here's the bottom line. We agreed in writing that we would enforce this agreement. We also had side discussions with the South Vietnamese government about what we would and wouldn't do. It was their job to be the army on the ground. It was not our job to do that anymore. We helped. We're done. We're gone. But it was absolutely required of the commitments we made in January of 73 that the North Vietnamese would stay in their cage. They would not continue supplying the Viet Cong down the Ho Chi Minh Trail. They would not continue supporting revolutionary movements nearby. They would not rearm. And we were actually obligated to blow up any new armaments shipped by the Soviets to North Vietnam. This is kind of a big deal because in the immediate aftermath of the Democrats in Congress cutting off our aid to the South, the Soviets actually shipped more armaments into North Vietnam in a matter of 18 months than they had shipped to North Vietnam in the entirety of the war before that. So, of course, the North Vietnamese Army was entirely equipped to just roll over a South Vietnam that didn't have bullets or gasoline in April of 75. Nixon signed a treaty that solved these problems. It was to be backed up with that American air power, that Strategic Air Command that you served so brilliantly in, and really on a Curtis LeMay model. You know, we're going to do from the air what a previous generation might have needed to do from a technological standpoint with boots on the ground. But we really don't have to here. We're just trying to maintain the status quo and disrupt their ability to become a problem again. And then, yes, sure enough, the Democrats cut off everything. So within 2 years, South Vietnam is subjugated. Millions in re-education camps, you know, which is, you know, our nice version of concentration camps that the communists prefer. You know, a third of the Cambodian population murdered in under 3 years by a man that the hippies in this country referred to as the George Washington of Cambodia. You know, nearly half a million South Vietnamese dead in the South China Sea just trying to flee. And countless more who thankfully have enriched our country greatly as we resettled them here. You know, I grew up near Fort Smith, Arkansas, had a huge Vietnamese community there because they resettled a bunch of those guys at Fort Chaffee. You know, you see them in pockets all over the country, but and they're wonderful, wonderful citizens today, but they shouldn't have to be. They should be happy, productive citizens of their own free country. And it's our fault that they aren't. We wasted a decade of blood and treasure and then threw it all away. And we've done that again and again.
Oh, we sure did. You know, and the treatment of our veterans from the war reverberates down through today. I mean, absolutely down through today and every day that you and I walk this earth and we'll continue to do so. The betrayal of the Vietnamese people, you know, those aren't that armor and that infantry and artillery that came in with the North Vietnamese army were perfect targets for the technology of the air power and naval air power that we had then to be destroyed. You know, so saying we had to have boots on the ground to hold it is just poppycock, to be honest with you. It's a complete betrayal. Now, let me ask you this. The Treaty of Paris is a treaty. It was ratified by the Congress, by the Senate, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah. And those same U.S. senators then proceeded to break it to smithereens before the North Vietnamese even could. And it's not just that. It's all the side agreements with South Vietnam. Again, the strategy was really simple. We've stood up the ARVN, the Army of the Republic of Vietnam. They are good to go. They don't have air power. So we're going to provide the air power if anybody does anything bad. You know, this is actually a peace treaty. We're actually done with the war, right? So a new violation would be a new war. And so we are obligated under that treaty, just as we are under the NATO treaty, to treat acts of aggression as collective in nature, and we're going to, you know, they send massed armored formations across the DMZ. We're going to blow them up with B-52s. And right. it's not rocket science. And if they take in a bunch of prohibited armaments, which they have agreed are prohibited in a binding treaty, if they do that, we're going to blow them up in Hanoi and Haiphong. And you know, it's very simple. We spent 4 years telling these people to stand up and do their part and be partners. You don't have to do everything, but you have to do this stuff.
Right, right.
And then we prevented them from having the ability to do the stuff we told them to do. It's just mind-numbing.
It is mind-numbing. We've got to take another break, Dr. Martin. When we come back, we'll see a clip of the boat people. You mentioned 500,000 people dying out in the oceans, but there have been just dramatic downstream catastrophic consequences for America and the Vietnamese people throughout the years. We're talking with Dr. Rod Martin about that issue and how it relates to today, because it does. We'll be right back.
News is moving faster than ever, and so are we. Worldview Tube brings you 24/7 live stream coverage, and now, real-time alerts when it matters most. Once you have the Worldview Tube app installed, exit the app and navigate your way to settings. In settings, locate the tab labeled Notifications. Select the Notifications tab. Scroll down until you locate the Worldview Tube app icon. Select the tab, and here you can turn on and customize your notification experience for the Worldview Tube app. News doesn't wait, and neither should you. Turn on push notifications to stay informed, every headline as it happens.
Đó có một cái gia đình là gồm 6 người đem đầy đủ lương thực mà cũng vẫn chết hết.
Since the change of government in southern Vietnam more than 10 years ago, over 500,000 Vietnamese refugees have attempted to cross the South China Sea in the hope of finding asylum in a new country. Unknown numbers have perished on the way, either drowned at sea, attacked by pirates, or dying of thirst, starvation, and exposure.
Từ lúc đó chúng tôi rất là tuyệt vọng, không còn cầu cứu ai nữa.
What is the news from the mainland? Is there anybody on board who lived in my village? Do you have any news of my relatives and friends?
Previously uninhabited, this island was soon crammed with 50,000 people.
Since the exodus of Vietnamese refugees began, some 60,000 refugees have been rescued by commercial shipping. Of course, nobody knows how many took the risk and did not survive.
Welcome back to the Rob Mader Show. We're live on Worldview Tube and our X Space is simulcast. And my guest today is Dr. Rod Martin, who is a great American. And you can find him at the Rod Martin Report on Substack. And he has a great essay that was republished actually last week about the fall of Saigon and Vietnam and why it's important for us to understand that whole process, the war itself, what happened at the end, and how it relates to everything that has come after it from a military and strategic, geopolitical strategic perspective, and how the United States interacts with our allies and our adversaries. And Dr. Martin had to show that clip because on May 2nd, on Saturday, I got to spend a few minutes with a man named Hung Cao, who's the acting secretary of the Navy for the United States Navy. And he was a child on one of those boats. So I just wanted to highlight that May 2nd was National EOD Technician Day. I'm an EOD technician from early in my Air Force career as an enlisted man, and I had the opportunity to go to the festivities over at Eglin Air Force Base at the Memorial and the Navy School on Eglin Air Force Base that still runs the program over there. And Hung Cao was just a great American. But he spoke to us about the trauma that he has been through his entire life, not just his combat time, and how he and his family have had to deal with his disabilities in that regard. So it's very important we talk about the great Vietnamese Americans that have that are contributing to our society, but it's also very important for us to understand what went wrong from the U.S. government's perspective so that we can prevent that kind of really catastrophe from happening again, isn't it?
Well, we just didn't keep our word. And, you know, I grew up, as I said earlier, very near Fort Chaffee in Arkansas, and that was one of the main resettlement locations. We got Cuban boat people about 5 years later, and that was part of why Bill Clinton lost his reelection as governor in 1980, his only loss other than his first congressional race. And, and he was just very, very foolish in his handling of that. But the Vietnamese situation went much better. And those folks have integrated into the community. Of course, they've moved all over the country, but there's a significant Vietnamese community in the neighboring city of Fort Smith to this day. And just being around them when I was a small child, actually, and when they were fresh off the boat, was really a searing experience. It was just so tragic. These were good people. These were people who really, in many cases, had significant careers in their homeland. They had, you know, doctors and lawyers and all kinds of different things. And here they are with nothing but the shirt on their back. And it's for no good reason at all. It really is. And I used the term boat people a minute ago, but these people didn't have boats in most cases. Can you imagine the horror you must be facing if you're willing to put your family on a makeshift plywood raft and just launch off into the South China Sea with no idea of if there's going to be any ship come by? What are the odds? The South China Sea is not some placid lake in the woods. It is one of the choppiest bodies of water on Earth, and it's big. And these people are literally fleeing the communists with no hope of being rescued. They're just going off into the water randomly and hoping an American aircraft carrier or a freighter or something might find them. They don't have radios. They don't have anything. And it's just, it's mind-boggling to imagine what prompts that. But then we saw what prompted it. Their predictions were correct. What happened in South Vietnam after the conquest was simply horrific. You called it a Holocaust earlier, and you're exactly right. And then there's an infinitely greater Holocaust that happens in Cambodia contemporaneously. The Khmer Rouge actually murdered a third of their population in under 3 years. It was so morally shocking that the North Vietnamese invaded to stop the slaughter. How bad can you get? So it was just a terrible situation. It was entirely preventable. It was entirely our fault. And it didn't require us having an American army in Indochina for the rest of time. It just came down to, will we keep our word? And we couldn't manage that for 6 months after the treaty, and it all unraveled.
Yeah. Today, when we look at that area today, Dr. Martin, do you see an ability for the United States to have a positive impact and at least neutral and economic relations with the North Vietnamese government, the Cambodian governments, and those kind of folks?
Well, Cambodia is a much better place now. And, you know, they have a reasonably decent tourist industry. They've had an armed conflict recently with Thailand that the president did a masterful job of brokering a truce in. We actually have quite good relations with Hanoi now, which always gives me mixed emotions because I kind of want to send you to bomb them some more. But you know, actually, we get along pretty well. There's still a communist dictatorship. This isn't somewhere you want to live. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. And, you know, with amazing beaches and this incredible, diverse and talented people, and they are becoming an economic powerhouse, and we can do a lot of good in tandem there that I believe can move them toward freedom over the next couple decades. I think they're headed in that direction, at least to some degree now. And the president is clearly very committed to that trajectory, just not committed in the way of sending 250,000 troops to occupy Hanoi forever, you know, or something we might have done 25 years ago. So I think there's a lot of hope in the region. Certainly the communists did not actually overrun Thailand, did not overrun Malaysia, did not overrun Singapore. And we just signed a tremendous defense agreement with Indonesia, which is remarkable. Correct. Another pillar of the non-aligned movement, like India. And what it effectively does is it enlists the brown water Indonesian Navy as sort of the Indonesian National Guard, you know, and we can further block the straits if we need to. If we get into a war with China, we can strangle them in very short order with control of those straits. So it's the exact opposite position that the Soviets were trying to create at that time. And, you know, the Philippines are going well. Actually, you put out an interesting thing that I think came from Nikkei on the renaissance in U.S.-Philippine relations in the last year. And, you know, the Taiwan arms deal, glorious, sending them HIMARS, sending them howitzers, all the things you need to blow up, landing craft in the water. Japan is rearming in a positive way and making themselves available for Taiwan's defense. This nuclear submarine deal we have with South Korea in some ways is even better than the one we just struck with Australia, because the South Koreans are actually going to build nuclear submarines in Philadelphia. And in the process, they're going to increase our ability to build nuclear submarines here domestically by about 50%. So the entire security architecture from New Delhi to Tokyo is just transformed in, honestly, a single year of an administration with vision for that. And my hopes for it are both significant and highly optimistic.
That's pretty incredible. You've probably seen that I talk a bit with a guy named John Conrad and some other,
he's awesome.
My friend, Captain James Fennell, who I went to Air Command and Staff College with. We discuss choke points, the key choke points around the world quite often, especially in the context of the Chinese Communist Party, just as you have discussed and written about. The choke point effort is the key foundation of the president's peace through strength strategy that Elbridge Colby is just masterfully documenting and implementing, isn't it?
Yes. It's extraordinary because, look, the U.S. Navy is the most potent military force on the planet. And I apologize to my Air Force friends when I say that. I'm sitting here, you mentioned Eglin. Eglin's right across that bay from me. We've got the EOD guys over yonder. And oh my goodness, what the U.S. Air Force can do is unparalleled in human history. But the Navy can absolutely close the Strait of Malacca and the Strait of Sunda and the Strait of Lombok and the Strait of Hormuz, and all of the other choke points that matter. And of course, you know, Trump started that process with the Panama Canal, kicking the Chinese out of the ports they held on both ends of the canal. I mean, we were looking at potentially you elect another Joe Biden and we have a Chinese naval base in Venezuela, maybe in Cuba, and they've got control because they've got control of the canal. All of this is mind-numbingly stupid, and Trump has overturned it in just record speed. There's nothing like it in history. So I'm very impressed with how they're executing on this. I hope our European friends will start acting like friends and we don't have to actually have a divorce there. But I am reminded that we used to have five bases, including a SAC base in Morocco. And the distance from Barksdale to Casablanca is identical to the distance from Barksdale to Ramstein.
That's right.
So we do have options.
That's right. My dad took us to Morocco in the late 60s, early 70s. So my brothers and I had quite an adventure They're a place called Kenitra, just north of Rabat. They are very good allies. I played baseball with the current king when I was 11 years old down in Rabat at an exhibition game. They love Americans, and I would love to see us get back in there and reestablish our bases there. And, man, if they want somebody to help volunteer to do it, I'll do it without pay. Dr. Martin, we got to take one last break. When we come back, I want to take it right to where we're at right now. And let's talk about why the Vietnam experience and the fall is related directly to today, because what's going on in the world is not a neocon effort. And I want to give us an opportunity to split that up and show why the president is on the right track, especially in the Iran war. We'll be right back with Dr. Rod Martin.
You woke up with a sore throat and a low-grade fever. You know you are getting sick, so here's your choices. You can get sicker and miss work, try to see a doctor this week, or sit hours in a crowded waiting room at urgent care.
I have a smarter option for you. Open your medical emergency kit, match your symptoms to doctor-recommended prescription in your booklet, and take the right meds now and get well faster.
This is not a first aid kit. It's like having an urgent care in your home. It includes doctor-prescribed medications to treat over 39 medical issues like respiratory infections, strep throat, pneumonia, UTIs, and more.
No waiting to see the doctor and no standing in line at the pharmacy. It's right here.
Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit, and here's how to order.
Go to worldviewhealthcare.com. Your kit to treat dozens of common and serious illnesses is rushed to your door. WorldviewHealthcare.com. That's WorldviewHealthcare.com.
The emergency kit available at WorldviewHealthcare.com. Make sure you don't have to go to urgent care. I got pneumonia. I didn't have to go. I took this last year. Stayed at home. Went to bed.
Hey, Becky. Well, there are scenes of panic and pandemonium at Kabul airport today as desperate people pour onto the runway trying to flee the country in what can only be described as a chaotic exodus. Now, people are literally clinging on to US military aircrafts as they try to take off. The US is in charge of the airport there, but their focus is on the evacuation of American personnel. As far as commercial flights go, it's a disorderly mess with little security, and the commercial flights are currently not running. We know that as of last night, the U.S. military had flown around 500 embassy personnel out of the country on military aircraft. They're working up to a capacity of several thousand out per day, but they won't have that capability for a few days to come. As for the Afghans that have worked in various roles for the U.S., it's going to be a much tougher journey to get out of the country. As I mentioned, commercial flights are problematic. Thousands of Afghans are stranded at the airport with their suitcases and whatever other belongings they could muster together. And just getting to the airport, Becky, from far-flung locations in Afghanistan means having to run a very dangerous gauntlet that could cost them their lives. There are also reports that NBC News can't confirm that five people have been killed at the airport. It's unclear under what circumstances. Could have been gunfire. It could have been a stampede. But it's so chaotic there. The details.
Welcome back to the Rod Mayna Show. It's More War Monday, and we're live on Worldview 2. And my guest is Dr. Rod Martin, founder and CEO of Martin Capital, and the owner and writer on the Rod Martin Report on Substack. And Dr. Martin, you know, bringing this discussion up to today, that originally when I saw that video, I thought it was faked of the Afghani people trying to hang on to the aircraft, the C-17 there and everything. And we don't have to dive real deep into it, but I see this as a very, very almost identical betrayal by America of these people, the same way we did the Vietnamese by leaving the way we did when we had a plan that the current president had put together and it was put on the shelf.
Yes, and what else is new? You know, that's the story of this long, long trail of bodies going back to the Truman administration. It's just so tragic and so needless and so endlessly repeated. Afghanistan is a much more difficult country in countless ways than South Vietnam was, or than Iraq was, or lots of other places we might find ourselves involved. And yet it wasn't intractable. And this idea that it's the graveyard of empires is ahistorical. You know, people string together a few factoids they heard in a news report and think they actually know some history. And, you know, it's really not true. This was a situation where we made an awful lot of promises. We did have a plan that would have worked. It didn't have to go the way it did. And instead, we handed this country to a bunch of mass murderers. You know, the Taliban is just the worst. It's pretty bad, I would say. I would say that it's one of the worst things on earth today, that the Iranian regime executes young girls for getting raped. Mm-hmm. Well, the Taliban goes further. I mean, there's just no limit to the depravity of this awful, awful group of people who now have control of a country. It's so bad that they were counting on Chinese Belt and Road Initiative money to come in and develop the country. And of course, they'd skim off the top. And the Chinese, all these years later, have been largely unwilling to do that because they just see them as a bunch of bandits. Now, Afghanistan is rich in resources, and I have no doubt that the Chinese military would have zero compunction about cracking enough heads to make their investments pay off. And they think it's too much trouble because of the Taliban. So can you imagine being a young teenager living under that and being educated, if at all, by that regime's schools? This is a horrible, horrible future for them. And like we see in Iran, you know, where you've got all these pictures and video clips of a very modernizing country in the 70s that is suddenly plunged into darkness. There are a lot of those pictures of Kabul in 1970. And, you know, the world was going the right way in a lot of these places. We didn't have to throw that away.
That's right. That's right. We didn't. They've even attacked the Pakistani people,
yes,
and are getting responded to by the Pakistani armed forces, which I'm so glad the Pakistani armed forces is doing that, because I know what the Taliban want. They want those nuclear weapons.
Yes.
And they'll do whatever they can to get them because they see what's happening with Iran. And that's why the Iranian terrorist government is trying to keep what they have and continue to build on that. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. Look, I'm pretty honest about it. I'm not a pro-war person. I've actually, you know, the people that I am closest with in my life have seen war up close. I've seen war up close. I've participated in it. But most of us are not pro-war people. But we voted for Donald Trump under the peace through strength strategy idea so we wouldn't get into another 25-year war like we stupidly did in Afghanistan. There's a right way to do things and there's a wrong way. Afghanistan and Vietnam are two prime examples of the wrong way. But this president is trying to end a war, in my view, that's been going on since I first put on a uniform at age 17 in 1979. And that is a good way. And this air and naval campaign has been masterfully done and continues to be masterfully done, even though the president has opened up a very sliver of a window for somebody with some sanity inside Iran's government to step forward and let us end it by giving up their nuclear material and agreeing to never come into the Straits of Hormuz again. What are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Well, all of that's correct. And I would add that the media in this country is treating that enormous victory in the exact same way that Cronkite treated Tet in 1968. They might as well have as their editor Baghdad Bob. It's just crazy. But anybody who's really paying attention knows Trump isn't doing this willy-nilly. The idea that he didn't have a plan is stupid. And what we're accomplishing is just staggering. First and foremost, people have to understand, Iran is the director, funder, and armor of every major armed conflict in the region, period. All of them. You know, whether you're talking about the Houthis or Hezbollah or Hamas, Doesn't matter. It's all coming from Iran. So if you solve that problem, either by depriving them of enough cash to be able to continue that, or actually getting to a free Iran, either way, you actually bring about Middle East peace, which, you know, just sounds crazy, but it's actually in reach. And what does that do? Well, we can draw down in region, and likewise, we can draw down in Europe, not leave Europe unless they want to really continue to be stupid, but, you know, maybe deploy a little more smartly. We talked about Morocco. I would note that the same people who are all about Ukraine all the time are horrified by the idea of actually moving some troops from Germany to Poland, which borders Ukraine. It's mind-numbing. They are married to their inertia. And we have an opportunity here with Iran that I think we demonstrated exceedingly well in the final 2.5 weeks of the campaign before the ceasefire, which is the ability to actually take out these IRGC thugs in the streets one by one with drones being remote controlled from Nevada. I mean, there's nothing like it in the history of war. So if you're able to do that, then no, you don't need boots on the ground. You just have to degrade the regime's capabilities sufficiently that the people are not safe, but safe enough to rise. And I believe we can get there. I don't know. No one's ever tried this, so we'll find out. But it's worth a try. And even if we fail, we have eliminated Iran as a major enemy from a military perspective, from the ability to project power, from the ability to harass shipping. When this is over, they won't have that anymore. And that's going to have direct consequences for the price of oil, because if you take off the risk premium that's been applied to anything that flows through the Strait of Hormuz for most of our lifetime, you know, that makes a big difference for global economy, and poor people become wealthier and everything gets better. These things are about healing the world. And Donald Trump is not a neoconservative. He doesn't think that American power directly applied with boots on the ground and an occupation are the way to handle everything. But that doesn't mean he doesn't share the goals of freedom. And that is the picture of Ronald Reagan. You know, the critique of Nixon and Kissinger was that at times they seemed a little cynical in their realism. I think that's an unfair criticism, but nobody could ever say Ronald Reagan was cynical about anything. He just understood that the short, sharp, direct use of American power at the moment of decision was the correct use, and it was compatible with our democratic system, which necessarily demonizes anything the military does in an age of 24/7 news. So Reagan got it. And Reagan also got that if you deprive the enemy of the cash to continue their war, they collapse. And that's exactly what he did to the Soviet Union by pushing up what they had to spend through an arms race while collapsing the price of oil with King Fahd in Saudi Arabia to deprive them of hard currency earnings. And that brought about the fall where nothing else had. Trump is doing that to China. He's doing it to Iran. He's doing it, honestly, to Russia. And when the Iran conflict is over, Putin better be ready to deal or it's going to get bad.
Now, I think they're talking, Putin and the president, because there's an economic piece to their situation that I think we have leverage on right now. Because they see the weakness of China's networks, their economic system, their military system. We proved with the air operation that their military systems that were supposed to be the vaunted, be able to take down the stealth and all that were absolute failures. So I think you're right there. But the key thing is the blockade, Iran's IRGC losing $500 million a day, and they can't pay their people. Is the longer they can't pay their people, the more apt we are to see not just a peaceful resolution to this, but an economic boon resolution to this, where people in the Middle East are all among friends instead of having this enemy that's everywhere.
Right.
Your last thoughts on this, Dr. Martin. Thank you.
I think we're moving into a more obviously American century than we could have imagined in what we called the American century. I think China is about to fall off the cliff. They've got about 10 more years where they can mask that to some degree, but the inexorable math of a total fertility rate under 1.0 is just mind-boggling. They're on track to lose 75% of their population over the next few years. And guess what? It won't be in a straight line. So you have this ever-shrinking number of working-age people supporting this ballooning group of elderly. They're not going to have the means to do the things they want to do after a decade. And that's the danger point. So Donald Trump taking choke points, showing, well, I'll just say humiliating the Chinese arms industry, and by the way, the Russian arms industry too, but they're doing a good job of that for themselves in Ukraine, cutting off their sources of supply of cheap energy from Russia and Iran and Venezuela, eliminating their allies, putting them in a box.
Exactly.
You only have to make it work for about a decade, and they're not going to be able to do the things that they wish to do toward Taiwan or Siberia or whatever.
And, sir, that's the perfect picture of peace through strength. You don't have to go to war with people. You just got to be able to, you got to be strong enough to give them the decision to not do these kinds of things. President Washington said that, and every smart president on down the line should have been able to grasp onto that concept. But we have one now, Donald Trump, that's implementing it. And I appreciate you being with us today, sir. Thank you very much.
It's great to be here.
And you can find him on X at Rod D. Martin. Go follow him, guys, because this man, you have to read what he's putting out. And you see him on TV a lot on Real America's Voice and those kind of programs, too. And hopefully here again one of these days soon. Tomorrow's Training Tuesday. And don't forget, this is Armed Forces Appreciation Month. Pray for your veterans. Reach out to them and do a buddy check. Make sure they're okay. I'll see you then.